You're listening to Cosmic Tonic.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let me say that again.
Cosmic Tonic.
Hello. Thanks for tuning in to the Cosmic Tonic podcast. We have an exciting announcement. Cosmic Tonic will be raffling off one 60-minute reading with the three of us per month from September to the end of December. To enter, please go to the top menu bar of our homepage to sign up at www.cosmictonic.com. We'll reach out to you mid-September to let you know if you won. In this episode, we speak with astrologer Whitney Will about the archetype and sign of Virgo. If you like what we do, please leave us a 5-star rating, write a review, or share the podcast with your friends. We appreciate it. And there's a couple different ways you can listen to us. One way is on your favorite podcast app or by subscribing to us on YouTube. As you know, we are committed to bringing you the best content related to astrology and the occult. We are fully funded by viewer support, so feel free to support our podcast by visiting our donation link at the bottom of our homepage. Again, that website is www.cosmictonic.com. For those of you who donated, thank you so much. It really helps us keep this podcast going. Thanks again for being here and enjoy the show. Okay, so we are here to talk about the sign and archetype of Virgo. And Virgo's season spans between August 23rd and September 22nd. Its polarity is negative. Its mode is mutable. And the element is Earth. The ruling planet is Mercury. And the part of the body that Virgo rules is the digestive system. But before we get into all the juiciness of Virgo, we have a very good friend of ours, Whitney, here to speak about her interaction and her expertise on Virgo. So we're really excited to have her today. And I thought about the first time I met you, Whitney, and we were in an astrology class together, and we just so happened to be on camera like we are now, and you were on video, and I was looking in your background, and you had this gorgeous bookshelf, and all the books were completely organized and totally color coordinated. And I just looked at you, and I was like, oh, wow, I'm gonna really like this woman. But that was my first experience with you, Whitney. So you immediately came to my mind to record this episode. And if you want to tell the audience a little bit about yourself before we get started, that would be great. And your approach to astrology also would be awesome.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, ladies, for having me. I'm really honored to be here. Yeah, so I am here representing both of my luminaries, my Virgo sun and my Virgo moon, in a new moon configuration. I was born about 15 hours after the Virgo new moon. And yeah, my approach to astrology has been, or my journey with astrology has been a really lovely, intuitive walk through it. My undergrad degree is in the classics, and so it was really Chris Brennan's astrology podcast that kind of grounded astrology in the ancient tradition that really brought me into it. And then I started studying it more officially through my master's program in counseling psychology. So kind of my counseling degree and my astrology study were co-occurring obsessions. And so they've always been knit really close together. And so I think of astrology as kind of a therapeutic modality, a tool for self-insight and for kind of compassion and healing in relationships. And that's what I kind of love the most about it is astrology is a non-pathologizing language. So, right, can speak about differences between people without kind of these undertones of value or of health, you know, can explain why it might be difficult to communicate with your partner, or why it might be difficult to understand your child or your mother without one, you taking it personally, because if you just look at the birth charts of different people, you see how different we are. And I think that astrology can really create compassion between people for those differences. And because it's not about you. You don't have to take other people's differences personally. It becomes a more empowering language of how do we approach ourselves, right? And the stories of ourselves that are in our birth charts, and really relish them and discover what is there. And how do we approach other people with both compassion and also delight in them being able to show us different parts of the world than we would ordinarily experience, both inner and outer.
I think that's a really beautiful place to start. And I want to feed back to the conversation we were having before we started recording. So the people on this call, I think, are an interesting sample, because we have you, Whitney, with both luminaries in a part of the chart that's less visible, let's say. It's not in a traditional aspect to the ascendant. So it's one of the less visible houses. It tends to be a little more occluded or hidden. It's not necessarily something we wear on our sleeve. And then we have Jasmine and Kestrel, who both have Virgo risings, which is arguably one of the most visible places to wear your Virgo. So you had said before we started recording that there might be a distinction between the Virgo that you feel on the inside and what other people perceive. And I wondered if you could just elaborate a little more what you meant and what it feels to you on the inside. And maybe we can also discuss what other people might perceive with this sign.
Well, I think in some ways I don't think about my Virgo outside of relationship to my Leo, which is maybe right that distinction or that kind of threshold between Virgo and Leo, because I have a Leo stellium in the seventh, which is very loud, and then it kind of drops off into, I kind of picture my eighth house of Virgo as like an alchemist basement, out of like Leo thinking that it's found the gold in the world and being very celebratory. And I think, you know, I think my images for Virgo are more hidden ones, like the alchemy lab and the apothecary. And so I think, but I think also kind of one of the stories that can cross the threshold from Leo into Virgo, right? Leo being very out there, the sign of the authentic self, and then the Virgo kind of the moment when we decide that we want to become kind of like as much gold on the inside as the outside. We want to, I see kind of the task of Virgo is the desire to become worthy. And I think that kind of boundary between the seventh house, where we're in relationship to others and getting, you know, positive feedback from others, or, you know, getting feedback from others, into the eighth house, which can be kind of the more tender, closeted, deeper, intimate space of other people, but also can be, I think of it as the house of the interpersonal shadow, can also be a place of shame, and Virgo is really susceptible to shame. And so the story of my eighth house, I think, is kind of the story of my journey with shame and how Virgo feels about Leo, which is often embarrassed or ashamed about how much room it takes up, how loud it is, how Leo can steamroll over other people, even if it's just out of pure enthusiasm. And so I think Virgo from the inside can be, I feel it as my deepest desire to do no harm. On the one hand, and then I think the like longing for wholeness on the other. And it can show up in, I think, on the inside as getting really obsessive about interactions with people, obsessive about what is the right way to be in the world, how to be good. And then I guess the other piece of that is that it's in my eighth house, which is in aversion to my Aquarian ascendant, which is like, just be whatever you want because you are a human being. And so you cannot mess this up because anything that you do is true. That's a few of the ways that it shows up from the inside.
Yeah. Well, and just listening to you, every little piece of it's pulling through these threads of Virgo or just affirming some of my thoughts, especially just your approach and the connection to counseling psychology that, you know, it feels like sort of that path from the Leo to the Virgo is that integration work or accepting all of our parts in the path of wholeness and self-love. And as you personally and with your clients are on that journey of embracing your worthiness and really self-acceptance and love, it becomes a mirror. And it made me also think of the wounded healer. I know Chiron sometimes gets associated with Virgo. It's not necessarily a sign, but it really got me thinking about it as you were speaking, because as you do that integration work or also try to see the best in others, like Virgo can be very self-effacing and critical, but on the other hand, it also has just this like selflessness of really truly, yeah, seeing the best in others. And I think what I'm hearing from that cusp of Leo into Virgo is you're doing that work. And when we do that work of integration and healing the wounds inside of us, those wounds also then become medicine for others. And we become, I think, in that Virgoan path, healers potentially. And there's like a magic to it, that alchemical place that you were talking about, especially in the eighth house. And I relate to that very much because I always think of my Venus in Virgo in the first and being ruled by Mercury as the alchemical goddess, and in that one-to-one interaction, what's happening. So you were just really bringing that alive for me. And I just wanted to reflect that too. It just seems like such a juicy placement to have your both luminaries in the eighth, in that place where you are helping people unpack their shame or being willing to see others in a different light too. That mindsight, that's a word we often use in therapy, you know, being aware of how we impact others and others impact us.
So maybe this would be a good moment to talk about how Virgo tends to be perceived. Because I do think it's different from what you described, Whitney. And maybe Jasmine or Kestrel, you could start us off there because you do have it again on your sleeve. I don't know that my first thought when I met either of you was that you were Virgo rising, but theoretically, with it on your ascendant, it's a little more visible, maybe, theoretically.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I'm a Leo sun, and I think I've talked about this in other episodes, that I was constantly searching for the affirmation of that Leo, and I never really resonated. So as I really started learning more about the Virgo archetype and, you know, its self-contained, sort of self-efficient qualities, sort of being one in herself, because I was always getting feedback that I was very independent and self-efficient, or like, yeah, self-efficient. I was also very self-effacing and critical. I was, as a small child, I was extremely hard on myself in the midst of also taking everybody else under my wing and supporting them. And I always sort of just had it together. I sort of pride myself on that. I can be totally chaotic, but the face I'm going to show to the public is typically really put together, but in a functional way. Like, I love fashion, but it's like, it's got to be functional too. And I'm in my closet right now, and it's fairly organized, but I don't have that much stuff because I don't want, yeah, it's like not having that abundance. And then just having a tremendous love of nature and animals and magic. Those are some of the things that come to mind for me. Do you want to add on to that, Whitney or Jasmine?
Yes, I'm a Virgo rising. I also have my North Node of Virgo, and I also have Saturn on the ascendant. So when I was really thinking about how I perceive being a Virgo rising and taking in consideration my experience with my North Node and also Saturn there, how it shows up consistently for me is I have this almost obsession with form and having the right form in everything I do. And I think Virgo many times is associated with this idea of perfection, but I started to dissect that a little bit for myself because I personally don't feel that I am a perfectionist or I strive for perfection. It's more about striving for, like I said before, creating that right form. And I know that I get a lot of feedback on that level about the way that I do things. And I was specifically thinking about my yoga practice. And yoga for me is not about being the best yogi. It's more about doing things correctly in the right way, even if it's just doing the most basic level, because that's all my body can do. And I tend to focus on that more than really reaching for something that might be out of range for me. And I kind of do that in my life and my lifestyle and the way I, you know, perceive things. And for example, editing, it's the same sort of energy that I put into making sure that things are coming together in a very specific way. And it is about that attention to detail, but it's not about perfection for me. And I do think having Saturn in Virgo, or anybody that has Saturn on the ascendant, it doesn't matter what sign, I think that their Saturn can bring some sort of container for the archetype that it's in. And maybe it's me just getting older, but I see my Saturn as kind of containing that idea of perfection and helping me along with that process of things not having to be so perfect. And I think what's coming through my language right now is my, you know, Virgo Pisces axis. And I don't think that you can really understand Virgo without understanding that axis between Pisces and Virgo, because I have a Pisces moon. So my Pisces moon is opposing my Saturn. So they're kind of always in competition with each other. And it's about giving way to both of those archetypes. So I've talked about this before in the podcast, I compartmentalize the two and I spend half of my day, and it's typically the mornings, really focusing on the Virgo aspects in my chart and how to really manifest that archetype in my life. And then when it comes 5 o'clock, it's Pisces time, which means something very different. And I get wild and I get messy and, you know, I cook and I'll have some wine and all of those fun things, which really kind of balances out for me. But before I knew how to balance the access between the two, I feel like I was in that place of being very self-effacing, and it was very stifling for me to be obsessed with something like perfection. So I had to definitely figure that out for myself.
To me, when I think about my own perfectionist streak, which
it's
is
there.
Oh yeah, it has been ample throughout my life. It remains beefy. As much as I try to be more caring towards myself within that or outside of that. For me, it often has everything to do with control. And I think that's a key word that I would offer when it comes to Virgo in contrast to Pisces. Virgo maybe having a tendency or a deep yearning to control the form or to control the outcome or to control themselves on some level, versus that Pisces ability just to trust, just to relax into the process, to not need to know how it's going to end. I almost called you Pisces. Whitney. Whitney, I'm wondering, does that resonate with you? Like this whole idea around control, or would you put different language to it? Like, how do you relate to the idea of control?
Yeah, I think that's a really important aspect to Virgo, I guess, where I would kind of maybe like add some deepening into that. I think Virgo has an obsession with competency and a real desire to produce whatever it dedicates itself to at a level of excellence, which is how I kind of like massage that idea of perfectionism that Virgo gets. I think, right, on the one hand, I think about it as a true dedication to an ideal. And then on the other hand, I think, right, this desire for competency in whatever it's doing. And for me in my life, that's looked like me doing all of the work for group projects a lot. No, it's fine. Just stop touching it. Just stop. No, it's okay. Just okay. Thanks. I'm going to do all of this. This is mine. No worries. You can have the grade. Just don't do anything. Just don't touch. So I think that control and the desire for things to be good, I think, right? Virgo is meticulous and is going to see the details all the way down. And so part of, right, what it does is it assesses the quality of things so potently, and the quality of its own work, which is why I think we have the self-criticalness, because it's, you know, all the errors are glaring. But I think it's from the desire to be, the desire to be good, the desire to be worthy, the desire to honor the world by spending copious amounts of time on small things. I always think of like God is in the details, and part of that phrase is like to honor God is to like, you know, whatever palatable term for God you use, is to like honor the smallest pieces, even if that means just noticing them. And so, yeah, I think to bring it back around, that control is just this like need to do your best. And if people are not taking the project seriously enough, but like who could take it as seriously as Virgo? you need a little bit of Capricorn energy to be like, okay, you spent 15 minutes on that. We're going to move on so that the whole thing doesn't get derailed because you're in the weeds. Yeah, I think that's where it comes from.
You know, you reminded me just now of a moment that you and I shared when we were in Colorado, and just in terms of noticing the details, you had noticed that I'd had this lilac nail polish all week, and you gave me a stone that was the same color, and you said, well, this is the color of your nails. I think it belongs to you. Or you said something along those lines. But it was such a moment of noticing a detail and then like giving an offering or just an act of kindness that was totally just like a burbling up of kindness and goodwill that had no, there was no ulterior motive. There was nothing, there was no other reason for it. So I think that's that example that I know from you maybe also is an accompaniment to the group project example. It's not, that one isn't about control, but it is about detail and noticing the detail and that, again, that offering. But also what you said made me curious too about how we might distinguish Virgo from the other earth signs. So you already gave a little bit of a distinction there comparing it to Capricorn, Whitney, but maybe we can go into that a little more. Like, how is the mutable earth of Virgo distinct from that cardinal earth of Capricorn or that fixed earth of Taurus?
I just wanted to say, Eliza, I feel like that story of the stone really touches the Pisces axis as well, because part of having Virgo in the eighth is having Pisces in the second, in that place of letting go and trusting and in the space of material resources, you know? And having Pisces in the space of material resources, it's like, oh, I mean, this thing is with me, but it obviously belongs to you. And having that, yeah, that letting go. I think Virgo as this mutable earth, I'll just tell a tiny little example story. So over the weekend, we went to a friend's farm because I needed to get flowers to dry, because I felt this like deep craving to make dried flower wreaths this fall. And they had a whole bunch of number two tomatoes. So tomatoes that have like small blemishes, like they've been sunburned or they're a little bit overripe or something. And they gave us like probably 80 pounds of tomatoes. And so I had this incredible abundance of tomatoes, and they were all kind of on the edge of becoming no good. And I just felt this tremendous pressure inside of me that gave way to this deep pleasure of spending Sunday processing all 80 pounds or whatever it was. And it felt really perfect. It was the last day that Venus was in Virgo. And it felt like this, like both this like sacrament to Venus in Virgo and this Virgo in process of, right, of being at the end of the summer, of having this tremendous harvest and not wanting to waste any of the resources, right? So that mutable earth, the analysis of Virgo, figuring out, okay, how do we use all of these material resources? What do we have? How do we use them? And then getting to spend the day in the pleasure of monotasking, of like, I'm cutting these tomatoes, I'm putting them in, you know, I mean, I had crock pots filled with tomatoes. I had tomatoes roasting in the oven. I was like, how do I like move all of these? Because I, you know, I can think there's a part of my mind that's like, well, it's more efficient for like industrial equipment to do this, and it's cheaper in terms of like, if we're actually going to monetize the whole thing. But I am getting so much pleasure, both like honoring the earth and the bounty of the earth and this produce given to us from our friends, these farmers, and putting it away from the family and just like treating the matter of the earth as the preciousness, the ephemeral preciousness that it is. How do you guys think of that process from the solid Taurus through Virgo, through Capricorn?
Well, I'll just say that I love that example, and I think it really captures the seasonal quality of the, I mean, you said it in terms of the end of summer, the harvest, but Virgo being that swing sign, the sign that takes us through from summer to fall, that bridge. And that's something that all the mutable signs have in common. But I think that that image of you spending an entire day processing these tomatoes to preserve them, to not waste anything, that does feel like so perfect for Virgo. To contrast that with the other earth signs. I mean, I don't know. I have Venus in Capricorn, so maybe I feel a little better or a little more comfortable speaking to that, which it's a Capricorn is a cardinal sign, and there is, I think, a valuing of efficiency. And I don't know that I would, I wish I could, but I don't know that I would find the same pleasure in spending a whole day with the tomatoes. I think I'd be like, I have so many other things to do. Is this the good, is this the best use of my time? Is this the most efficient use of my time? And I also see how that's so far beyond the point, but I have a lot of cardinal signs in my chart. And I think that is one distinction, like Taurus being the most, perhaps the most slow, the most sumptuous and unctuous in terms of taking time, in terms of the work to actually, at that time of year in the Northern Hemisphere anyway, that's when you're planting potentially, or when you're seeing the first seedlings come up, when you're, the fruit hasn't yet, you know, blossomed, it's not yet pickable, typically in Taurus season, unless you're talking about flowers. And then the Virgo, like taking us from that, the kind of the bounty of summer into the fall and preserving us for the winter. And then Capricorn just wanting to perhaps move through the material world a little more quickly or more efficiently or more prioritizing time. Saturn ruling Capricorn and being Kronos, the god or one of the gods of time. So I don't know if that makes sense. What would you say, Jasmine or Kestrel?
Well, what caught my attention, Whitney, when you were speaking about your process with the tomatoes, was this idea that you felt this tremendous pressure. And that pressure coming from an internal place. Nobody was actually putting that pressure on you. You were putting that pressure on yourself. And I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit. And because I really think that that pressure is real in the Virgo archetype, and it is a place that comes from an internal space. So I think for the audience, and especially those that have a lot of Virgo in their chart, they can identify with that pressure and putting that pressure on themselves. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about, like, where do you think that comes from and why?
Sure. Stephen Forrest, the evolutionary astrologer, in his book, The Inner Sky, describes Virgo on this journey to whatever ideal they've dedicated themselves to. And using kind of the weapon of self-criticism as this kind of like whip to move them along this access to the good or whatever that may be. And that it can really kind of torture itself to the point of exhaustion, until we kind of come to the space of what I call Virgo magic, the answer to the Virgoan paradox, or the Virgo koan of like, how do you make any progress when the distance is infinite, is right to realize that there's nothing that you can actually do that will make you worthy or deserving. You are those things in them just by being here. And that the acceptance and the internalization that you are already worthy, that you are already deserving, that you are already good is what allows you to actually make progress on those things. Because I think, right, that pressure, that feeling of wanting to do our best all the time, or I'm looking for kind of ways to say this that are not perfectionism. I kind of think of it as like seeds germinating in our lives. And then before we even see what they are, before we even see what they could become, we rip them out because of minor imperfections or something. But, and right, like you have to let things grow. Otherwise you just have barrenness. And that, kind of cliche, let not perfectionism be the enemy of the good, and is a really good mantra for the Virgo parts of our chart. And letting things take form, because to go back to what Kestrel said in the beginning, right? Virgo is exquisitely talented in noticing the good in others. So I think, right, having a little bit of that towards the own Virgo in places, and just realizing that sense of worthiness comes from inside, because it's really hard to meet Virgos that will say, oh, well, other people need to work as hard as I do in order to be worthy. It's kind of a special piece that gets saved for themselves. I mean, I'm sure it exists somewhere, because I think, right, if it's not going inward, then it might be going outward, which is maybe a Virgoan worry to have.
Yeah. And it does seem like such a beautiful blend of the polarities of, well, maybe it's not a polarity, but Virgo feels so divine to me, but also if it can embrace that human quality as well. And I've been kind of dabbling around with Brené Brown's Gifts of Imperfection recently. And I feel like maybe in letting go of the perfection or so much of what others think, Virgo can really cultivate that authenticity or the creativity and all that magic juiciness you were referring to, and help others with that process.
I think it's interesting that traditionally, Virgo is known as one of the double-bodied signs, and the other immutable signs, their two-ness is more evident. We have the twins of Gemini, we have the centaur for Sagittarius, which is half human, half horse, and Pisces, we have the two fish kind of yoked together. But the ancient depictions of Virgo were not merely about a young woman, but about a winged woman. So there really is this image of the goddess, this sort of winged, perhaps half bird, half lady, where I think we can read in some of that two-ness, but also what you're just describing there, Kestrel, in terms of some of that divinity. There is something of the goddess, I think, in the Virgo archetype, and something of the witch too, like with the practical magic of witchcraft, as well as that aspiration for service that we can see in some traditions.
Yeah, I mean, it literally is the divine and the human merged together. I mean, it's sort of angelic too in its quality.
Yeah. I wonder if this would be a good time to talk about the lunations this month or this season. So I believe the first one happens on September 6th, but let me just confirm that. The Virgo new moon happens on September 6th at 14 degrees of Virgo. And for me, like the most blindingly obvious part of this lunation, part of this new moon, is that trine to Uranus. So that's the thing that sticks out to me. It feels disheveling, but in a supportive way. It feels like the rattling to kind of, I almost think about, you know, in a plant pot, if you overwater it, the soil can get too caked and too like compressed, and you have to kind of stick your fingers in and sort of loosen the soil to let the, to aerate the roots a little bit. This feels like a bit of a Uranian aeration process, this new moon. But what are your all's thoughts on this lunation?
I was just noticing Hygieia's right there, like the moon's applying. We don't talk a lot about Hygieia, but I just brought in more of the Virgoan of like attention to health, attention to nutrition, attention to the body. So something was really getting illuminated for me with that archetype as well. So I just wanted to pull that in, especially because it's going to be in my first house of the body. I've been thinking a lot and making a lot of changes to what I do in my daily routines and the details. It's really in the details and seeing the nuance and changes to my own blood work, really. But Hygieia seemed to play in there. I don't know. Yeah.
That's And Hygieia is associated with cleanliness and this idea of cleaning up, especially during the new moon time and it being in Virgo. And what popped into my head was this idea of spring cleaning. But even though it's not springtime, it does feel like we're entering into a new season, and Virgo is that bridge between summer and fall. This new moon feels like an opportunity to redo things and clean up our surroundings to enter the fall season. I try to do that at least twice a year, where I completely clean and rearrange my home. But this new moon really speaks to me on that level.
Yeah, I think this new moon, right, has that trine to Uranus. But Mercury, as the ruler of Virgo, is in Libra and is in a trine to Saturn in Aquarius. And so it feels very constructive to me, right? Because we've got this new moon kind of in dialogue with the Saturn-Uranus square, but in really kind of constructive ways of like the luminaries are integrating the pressure from Uranus to make change and relate to our stuff in a new way. But Mercury is concerned with harmony and is in dialogue with Saturn about like, okay, we're not going to like purge the whole house. And so it feels kind of gentle in that way. And then we have both of the benefics, Venus and Jupiter, also in a trine. So it feels like this like really nice little boat almost of like, you're supported, you're floating, like you're not gonna sink, right? You're not getting blindsided by Uranus, especially in this lunation.
I agree. I mean, that Venus-Jupiter trine is like the Venus we've all been waiting for years, it feels like. And it does feel supportive, but it also feels clarifying and edifying. Like there's something about the air emphasis in this lead up to Libra season, and also the groundedness of Virgo, that there's a pragmatic edge to it. It's not without pleasure, but there's a pragmatic edge to it, I feel. And there's an ability to think clearly. And when you brought up Hygieia, Kestrel, it did make me think, I know that I'm sure we're all tired of talking about it, but we are still in a pandemic. Like it's not going away. The Delta variant is not subsiding, and it won't for a while, probably. And maybe there will be even more serious variants. So that idea of prevention as being more preferable than like, what, you know, well, getting it, but that There's something coming through with that, but I agree with you, Whitney, that it's kind of lovingly held, or it's a sort of foresight that's not punishing, but maybe to protect you and yours and everyone else. Like there is something about that cleanliness that we can apply to our own hygiene, our own habits, to see us into the fall with the least amount of harm possible, I suppose. Should we look at the full moon? So the full moon happens right at the end of Virgo season. It's right before, 2 days before the fall equinox. So it's on Monday, September 20th at 28 degrees. So that's the Pisces full moon. It's right on my north node, which is interesting to the degree. I don't know how that will manifest, but I need to look back at the chart to see what thoughts I had. But I don't remember there being any like hugely significant aspects that caught my mind. I mean, Neptune is sort of in orb, but it's kind of, it's separating from that. It's going to be a Pisces full moon anyway, so we'll already have that kind of watery, oozy, unctuous elements. But this does feel also with Venus and Scorpio at this point, I would say it's a little less lovingly held, maybe a little more messy, a little more swampy. Mars has entered Libra now as well, which kind of makes the Libra part of our chart a little more snarled than it was at the new moon. But the full moon itself doesn't seem really obviously afflicted by anything on first glance.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we talk about the rulers of the lunations as the ruler of the moon, but I think when we're looking at full moons, I definitely look at both rulers. Mm-hmm. And I think, so Mercury, the ruler of the sun in Virgo, and then Jupiter, the traditional ruler of that Pisces moon, they are in a trine at that point. Mm-hmm. And so I agree. It doesn't, it's not benefic as the new moon, but there is some, at least some kind of congress of like they're in communication running, you know, neither of them are in aspect to the moon itself, but there's something happening between them still. So it feels like maybe not quite as polarizing as it is possible for a full moon to feel like, okay, we're feeling the tension of those signs of those houses in our charts. But the rulers of the luminaries are kind of on the same team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, working together, it almost feels like it could pull through some insight, especially in those air signs still.
I think that's a really great point, Whitney, and it reminds me that Mercury will soon be about to go retrograde. So this is sort of Mercury slowing down, grinding to a halt, but in a very abundant and supportive dialogue with Jupiter. And yeah, it does feel, I don't know offhand how slow Mercury is going at that moment, but it does seem like one of the last good Mercury moments. And because Mercury is ruling the sun, as you mentioned, that does feel quite significant. And then we kind of enter the fall, starting October, and get, I believe Mercury goes retrograde on the 30th, but I might be wrong. It's at the end of the month anyway, and kind of entering the retrograde season and eventually the next eclipse season. So this does feel like there is an element of containment and constructiveness, but I think it's also, we are at that point of the year where we're ebbing into a little bit of a more gnarly astrology. That more happens in November, but does anyone have anything else to add on the lunations or on anything else?
No. I'm trying to be aware of everyone's time constraints today.
Thank you so much for having me in my Virgo placements. I feel like my Leo Aquarius is so heavy that gets all the airtime. So it's really special to get to talk about Virgo.
I loved everything that you said about it. It was really special to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us, Whitney.
Whitney. please tell us what you're up to in the audience. I was looking on your Instagram feed and you have this Moon Day Monday class that you're doing. So tell our audience where they can find you and what you have up for the fall season.
Yeah, thank you. So you can find everything on my website. It's called Star Hearth Astrology. .com or on Instagram at Star Hearth Astrology. I started teaching this year and I just love it. I love the collaborative nature. I love the discussion with students. I really love working with people to kind of integrate the living astrology into their charts and being able to practice that in a contained way. So I have kind of every size. Depending on what you want to do. I have I'm calling it a talk. It's kind of more of an invitation into a different way of experiencing qualitative time on the day after the Virgo full moon. I'm inviting you onto a journey of looking at the lunar cycle through a division of three, rather than four, so not the quarters, but looking at the trines as an invitation into a feminine experience of the lunar cycle. And then I have my kind of intro to astrology course, which really teaches you about astrology through the moon. Specifically, and so kind of using the moon as a vessel to learn the signs and to learn each other. And the moon is so much about our connection. It's kind of our connective tissue to the world around us, but also to the planets above, the most earthly. She's of the vessel in which the heavenly comes to earth. And so that's kind of my 13-week intro to astrology course that I'm taking signups for now. And then I also am doing a Saturn return class that follows kind of the three main transits of the Saturn return that happens. We're going to do one Saturday in September on the progressed lunar return, one Saturday in October on the nodal opposition, and then one Saturday in November on Saturn, on the Saturn return itself, kind of, right, honor each of those transits and how they speak to each other and how they kind of bring us into adulthood. So I'm really excited about that. And then if you already know about astrology or are already really engaged in your chart or something, then I have it's called Transit Integration Seminars. I'm realizing everything's so wordy. Whoops. I have Mercury conjunct Jupiter. And that is, we meet every other week and talk about the transits that are happening in a small group format with really the emphasis of looking at how they move through our charts and kind of languaging them. And it's really cool because you get to practice that with your own chart and also get to know people and see, hear their language for how transits happen in their chart. And so it's a good container as well. So yeah, all class all the time. Yeah. With all of these eclipses happening in Gemini and Sag, it's how do we learn from each other? How do we learn the information? So
that sounds so fascinating. I'm so intrigued by the looking at the lunar cycle in this sort of revised way with a focus on the trines. I'm really curious.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited about them.
That's starhearthastrology.com. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why don't we spell that just to say for people?
Yeah, so it's Starhearth astrology. Yeah, it's really about gathering around the hearth of my little Cancer South node. Try and make you cozy.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. I love it too. Anything else from anybody? No? All right. Well, we would like to thank everyone for being here, and we'll see you next time.
Bye. Thank you so much. Bye.